We're here with the Mishnah on Sadi Bet Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, Hamotzi, ben binyumino, ben bismalo. Someone carries out whether it's in their right hand or in their left hand, tocheko, in their lap, o al ktefav, on their shoulders, chayav. They are chayav, shekain masa b'nei kehat, because that is the way that b'nei kehat carried things. Now that really seems to be only modifying the issue of tefav, because the b'nei kehat b'katef isau, they carried on their shoulders. Now in terms of yamin, small and chayk, Rashi says either orach aro, that's a normal way for people to carry using their hands and their lap. The other thing he notes is b'shem Rav Yitzchak bar Yehuda matzati she'amar b'shem Rav Hai, explains the name of Hai shem feresh b'ashas Yerushalmi ufkudat Elazar ben Aron HaKohen, that Elazar ben Aron HaKohen had specific jobs or items that he had to take when they moved the Mishkan, and that was the Shemen HaMaor, the Torah Tasamim, the Minchat HaTamid, the Shemen HaMishcha. How did he carry? If this was on his persona, if he had to do this himself, how did he do that? He says, well, Shemen Echad B'Yamin, Shemen Echad B'Smol, V'Aktoret B'Cheiko, V'Chavitin B'Katef. That gets us all of these different possibilities of carrying in one individual, but it's something that was in the Mishkan, and mimicking that which is the Mishkan is considered to be the Malacha. Remember Rabbeinu Tam from earlier in the Masechta, that with regards to carrying, the Malacha is called a Malacha Grua. Because it's a Malacha Grua, you have to find a paradigm within the Mishkan in order to be Mechayevit. So you see this every time they mention this idea of Hotza'ah over here, they say, well, Masa B'nei Gahat is this way. So you have to find something in the Mishkan in which they are mimicking, and we'll see this in a second, that it's only true of things that are in the Mishkan, but if it's not exactly like it was in the Mishkan, it's not classified as Hotza'ah. Kila Achar Yado, if he does it, Kila Achar Yad, meaning not carrying it normally in his hand, somehow on the back of his hand, or in an unusual manner, Biraglo, does it on his foot, Bifiv, in his mouth, Ube Marpego. And Marpego here is a Machloket Rashi and Tosafot, which is found in a number of places in Shas. Rashi translates marpeko as aishila, which is your armpit. On the other hand, Tosafot translates marpeko as koda, which is your elbow. The question is, did he stick it under his armpit and then carry it out, or did he stick it in between his forearm and his bicep and carry it out on his elbow? Their machloket runs here. It's in Menachot as well. In the discussion of where to place the tefillin, the arm is known as, the hand is known as the yad. You have the kaneh, which is the forearm. The zroa, which is the part of the arm between the elbow and the shoulder. And the question of where the kiborit is, the word deot, that the kiborit, where the placement of tefillin was on your forearm, on the kaneh, where the forearm expands and the muscle of the forearm is. Obviously, Tosafot and even Rashi agree that the kiborit is above the elbow, is between the elbow and the armpit, the bicep, the front end of the bicep. But they argue about it here. They argue about it with regards to Netilat Yadayim. The Gemara has different locations where you do Netilat Yadayim for, in terms of Chulin, Truma, and Kodoshim. Again, there they discuss where the Marpeik is. And the last thing is, with regards to Arachin, we had, if someone is Makdish, their arm or their leg, how do they measure that? The Gemara there says you stick it into the water, and the amount of water that's displaced tells you what the size of the arm is. How far do you put your arm into the water? The Gemara there says, ad atzilav, until the atzil. Tosafot says that the atzil and marpeik are synonymous, and that means till your elbow. And so that's why Tosafot always translates all of these items as being the elbow. Again, others translate atzil to be your underarm, your armpit, rather than your elbow. But here, Tosafot again argues with Rashi about where this marpeik or what the marpeik is. Bilzno, in his ear, ubisaro, in his hair, Ubapundato, or in his belt, upi alamato, when it's facing downward. Uben pindato the chulako, between his belt or money belt and his clothing. Ubisfat chaluko, on the seam of his beged, of his clothing. Bimina'alo, in his shoe. Bisandalo, in his sandal. Patur, shlootzi, kederachamotzim. All of these are unusual ways to carry. It's not the normal way that one would carry something. And therefore, it's considered to be patur mina Torah, asur midi rabbanan. Amar Rabbi Elazar, amutzi masui lamala mi'asara tfachim. Someone who carries a load above 10 tfachim, chayav, shikain masa b'nei kahat. Because that was the way that b'nei kahat carried. The Gemara is going to ask in a second, how do we know that? Right away, Rashi distinguishes here between carrying and throwing. And this is one of the examples about this idea of otza being a malacha grua. Normally, any other malacha, if they did something like this, we would assume any manifestation of that type of carrying would be chayav. But here Rashi points out that we had a Gemara that says a person who throws Dalet Amot above Asarat Fachim, he is patur, because he threw the object in a Makom Patur. Reshut HaRabim only rises till 10 Tvachim. Above 10 Tvachim, there is no Reshut HaRabim, it's called a Makom Patur. A person throws an object, Dalet Amot, and it remains above 10 Tvachim, he's patur of Alasur. But over here, we're saying that if he carries something above 10 Tvachim, he is Chayav. Why? So Rashi distinguishes. He says there's a difference. The Masa B'nai Kahat was carrying above 10 Tvachim. They carried objects above 10 Tvachim. Therefore, for Hotza'ah, you're going to be Chayav for carrying above 10 Tvachim. They did not throw the objects above 10 Tvachim. Since they did not throw the objects above 10 Tvachim, you will not be Chayav for throwing above 10 Tvachim. So Masa B'nai Kahat Minalan, how do you know that B'nai Kahat carried their objects above 10 Tvachim? Because it says, Ala Mishkan v'ala Mizbeach Saviv. Says the Mishkan and the Mizbeach. Mekish Mizbeach Mishkan. There's a Hekesh. The juxtaposition of the Mizbeach to the Mishkan teaches us something. Ma Mishkan Yud Amot, just like the Mishkan was 10 Amot tall, which we'll see in a second, so too, the Mizbeach was 10 Amot tall. U Mishkan Gufei Minolon. How do you know the Mishkan itself was 10 Amot high? Okay, when we're talking about the Mishkan, you're talking about the centerpiece that includes the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodeshim. That's what the Torah calls the Mishkan. How do you know that that part of the Mishkan is 10 Tvachim high? Well, the answer is because it's made up of the Krashim. And the Krashim are, Min Alan Dechtiv, Eser Amot Arach HaKoresh. Each board was 10 Amot tall, or 20 Amot long. And being 10 Amot long, the height of the Keresh reached up to 10 Amot, and that was the height of the Mishkan. So that's how we know the Mishkan itself was 10 Amot high, and therefore we know that the Mizbeach was also 10 Amot high. Even though in the Torah it says that the Mizbeach is only 3 Amot high. It's actually a machloket how high the Mizbeach was, whether it was 3 Amot or 10 Amot. But according to the one who says it was 10 Amot high, what does it mean that it's 3 Amot high? It's Hasoveiv Ulamala, from the walking area around the Mizbeach and above. That Soveiv is 6 Amot up on the Mizbeach, and the Mizbeach then extends another 3 Amot up, and then the Karnot are another Amah that gets you to the 10 Amot on the Mizbeach. So when the Torah says that the Mizbeach is 3 Amot tall, it's not telling you the total height of the Mizbeach, but rather the height of the Mizbeach from the Soveiv, the walkway around it, and upward. So now we've already established, number one, that the Mizbeach is 10 Amot high because the Mishkan was 10 Amot high. And then Uchtiv, Vayifroset Oel al Mishkan. That they put the Oel above the Mishkan. Vamarav, Moshe Rabbeinu Persho. That Moshe Rabbeinu himself spread it out. Mikan Atalameid, Govan Shel Leviim. From here you can learn the height of the Leviim. Their Amot. That they were 10 Amot high. The only way Moshe could have been poreis the Oel on top was if he was 10 Amot high. Ugimire, and we learned the Chotuna de Bidle Bemotot, Tilta Miliel, Utre Tilta Militachat. 1/3 of it is above, and 2/3 are below. Ishtach to have a Midla Tuva, we see that it was way above 10 Tvachim. So let's go through all the component parts here of what we learned. Number one, we know that the Mishkan is 10 Amot high. We also know that Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who was Vayifroset the Oel, that he spread out the Oel, the coverings of the Mishkan, he himself did that. But the only way he could do that, if he was tall enough to reach above the Mishkan. Well, if the Mishkan is 10 Amot high, Moshe Rabbeinu must be about 10 Amot high to reach up and to be poreis the Ohel above the Mishkan. Then the Gemara makes another extrapolation, which is, well, if Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 Amot high, it must be that all the Levim are 10 Amot high. Once we've established that Moshe Rabbeinu and the Levim were 10 Amot high, we also know that they carried the Mizbeach. They carried the Mizbeach. How they carried the Mizbeach? B'katef Yisau. They carried it on their shoulders. Now we just established that the Mizbeach was 10 Amot high, just like the Mishkan. Well, if the Mishkan is 10 Amot high, and the Mizbeach is 10 Amot high, and they're carrying it on their shoulders, we just said before that when you carry a load on your shoulders, 1/3 of the load is above, and 2/3 of the load is below. That means that if they're carrying a 10 Amot high Mizbeach on their shoulders, now, it's interesting here, the Gemara does not distinguish between the fact that the Gemara just said they were 10 Amot tall and the fact that they're carrying it on their shoulders. To be honest, it really doesn't make much of a difference because the differential is so big. So even if you say that their shoulders are 9 Amot off the ground, let's say, given that they're 9 Amot off the ground, if the Mizbeach is 10 Amot tall, then 1/3 of it is above, 2/3 is below. That means 3 1/3 Amot are above their shoulder, 6 2/3 Amot are below their shoulders. Well, 6 2/3 amot, whether their shoulders are 10 amot or 9 amot off the ground, leaves a differential of a minimum of 2 1/3, and maybe even 3 1/3 amot, which is way above 10 tefachim. That means that the Mizbeach was being carried above 10 tefachim. That's the proof of the Gemara, that the Mizbeach was being moved above 10 tefachim. Vibay Zema, and others say, Mi'aron, that they learned it from the Aron itself, not from the Mizbeach. I mean, the rejection here is that maybe the Levi'im aren't as tall as Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's what Rashi says over here. The Shem Levi'im lo gvi'ala zayin amot. Who says that they are 10 amot tall? Maybe the Levi'im are 7 amot tall. How do they prove it now? They prove it from the carrying of the Aron. Because we know the height of the Aron is 10 tfachim. So if you look at that in the context of the Levi'im, that we see that Yivadim Aron, the Marmar Aron Tisha. The Aron is 9 tfachim high. Vikaporet, and the cover to the Aron is tefach. Harigan Yud, they're 10 tfachim. Ugmiri, and we learned to read the Chotuna, the Midlei, Bimotot, any load that's carried on poles, that's carried across the shoulders, Tiltum and the L, 1/3 of it is above the poles, Vitrei Tiltum Milara, and 2/3 of it is below. Ishtakach, Demelamalo Miyud Havakoi. So then we realize that it's above 10 tefachim. Because even, and here finally Rashi gets to something that's a realistic number. Rashi says, Afilu ein govan shel levim ela gilma amot kamonu. Says, even if the height of levim is not more than 2-3 amot, like us. Hare yudchet tefachim. That is 18 tefachim. Rashi claims that the height of a normal person, a normal individual, is 3 amot. What's not clear from Rashi again here is whether you're talking about to your head, or is he talking to your shoulders. Because that will make a big difference, assuming that the normal height of an individual is roughly 67 inches or 68 inches, then when you're talking about gimel amot, that would give you a idea of what the type of size of ama that we're talking about. I mean, according to Rashi, you're dealing with probably roughly 22-inch ama, 23-inch ama, if you think the height of an individual is 3 amot. On the other hand, Tosafot points out over here that the 3 amot only measures to the shoulder. There's more to get to the head. So it's roughly, a person is roughly 3.5 amot. If you do that, then you're dealing roughly with 18, 19 inch amot, which is probably, it makes a lot of sense. But you see here that they're dealing with what the normal heights of individuals are. So let's assume, like Rashi, that we're talking about the 3 amot. You're talking about 3 amot off the ground, which is the equivalent of 18 tfachim. If they're carrying the aron, which is 10 tfachim tall, and we just said that 1/3 of it is above their shoulders, and 2/3 is below. That means 2 1/3 tefachim are above. 6 2/3 of the tefachim, 3 1/3 of the tefachim are above. 6 2/3 of the tefachim are below. If I take them, they're 18 tefachim high, and I subtract 6 2/3 from that, I'm left with 11 1/3 tefachim off the ground, that the aron is off the ground. The aron's off the ground, 11 1/3 tefachim, we know that the aron's being carried above 10 tefachim. Now, it will matter here, according to Rashi, if Rashi's saying that 3 amot is the height of the individual, then it won't work, it'd be a very close call. I don't know if it would be 10 tefachim off the ground. So it seems that Rashi must be saying that the 3 amot is the shoulder level, and that's the way Tosafot learns over here, that when we talk about the height of an individual being 3 amot, that is only until their shoulders, not until the top of their head. He gives a number of proofs to that. One is the kuchim, catacombs that they dug into the rock to bury people. The size of them was 1 amah wide by 4 amot deep. So 4 amot deep is doing loud burial of someone who is 3 amot up to their shoulders plus their head, plus the makom aron, he calls it, the placement of the aron in there. It takes up space as well. So because of that, you have to make it 4 amot wide. But that shows that the individual is above 3 amot. What about the mikveh? The Gemara says, in order an individual go into mikveh, a minimum size mikveh is 1 amah by 1 amah by 3 amot high. Well, if it's 3 amot high, how does the person get in there? If his body until his shoulders is 3 amot, how does he get his head in there? Tosafot does not say that he bends his head down. What he says is that when he enters into the mikveh, he displaces water. He himself, when his body enters the water, the water is going to rise because of the displacement of his body, and that will cause it to rise above his head in order to utilize the mikveh. But because of that, Tosafot proves that the height of an individual is above 3 and below 4, somewhere in between the 3 and the 4 amot height. And you see that Rashi is claiming that his own height is somewhere around 3 amot. Again, it sounds like that's up to his shoulders. So here we have the proof that they carried these items above 10 tefachim. The Gemara says, "V'ligmar mi Moshe." Why didn't you learn from Moshe? Why did you move on to the second proof? What was wrong with learning from Moshe? Dilma Moshe shiny. Maybe Moshe was different. I mean, that Moshe was of unusual height, and that doesn't mean that the rest of the Levim were the same height. Damamar. Shechina only rests, brings its presence onto an individual who is wise, strong, wealthy, and tall. In that the Gemara here views the Ashrat Shechina, that the physical appearance of the individual, as well as all the other character traits, have to be exemplary and exceptional, in their behavior, but every part and parcel of them, whether it is wisdom, strength, wealth, in order to be the quote-unquote representative of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, we wanted to reflect in some way the perfect person, perfect Adam. Obviously, it never works out perfectly. But here, Moshe Rabbeinu, the Gemara claims, might have been a Baal Koma, might have been someone of height, but that's not necessarily true of the remainder of the Levim. Amar Rav Mishum Rabbi Chiya, Amotzi Masui B'Shabbat Arusho Chayav Chatat. Someone who carries a load on their head on Shabbat is Chayav Chatat, Shekein, and Shei Hutzal Usinkein. Because in this area of Hutzal, that's what they do. Why are they koveya? Why are they determinant in making this carrying when they're not the majority of the world? That's one location where they carry on their heads. If you want to say the way it should have been phrased, is this. Someone who is from this location, so he will be chayav, because in that city, that's what they do. Well, that city is not the majority of the world. Let's look at the majority of the world. The majority of the world does not carry that way. El itmar, hachi itmar. If you're going to say it, phrase it this way. Hamutzi masui el rosho patur. Someone who carries on their head is patur. V'im tim salomar anshe husal osim gains. What are you going to claim? That is a normal way to carry because the anshe husal do this. B'teila datan etzel kol adam. We nullify their position because the most of the world does not carry on their head. Now this is very interesting and somewhat difficult. Well, so what that the rest of the world doesn't carry that way? But if they do carry that way, why doesn't that determine, at least for their city, that that is the case? So Tosafot over here says, Mashmo de la tra nami amar de b'tela datan. I can understand when you're talking about a single individual, when you're talking about a number of people and you say b'tela datan, that we nullify their view. But if you're talking about an entire city of people that act in this manner, then why should it be b'tela datan? Why do we nullify or disregard the way that they carry? So Tosafot over here says that there is a difference between whether it's individuals, regions, areas, or cities, or medinot. That will make a difference in determining whether it's koveya or not koveya. That a person is certainly not enough to be koveya, and a city also may not be enough to koveya. And then he says, for instance, in Arabia, they do this, and therefore it's considered to be kilayim or problematic. He says, Eish lamar, tahatum chashuv min hag Arabia l'chol olam nami. The reason the people in Arabia keep thorns in their fields is because their camels eat it. So nobody else owns camels. But if you owned camels, you would mimic their behavior. You would do what they do. This place, Beit Manashaya, used to be sochet. They used to squeeze the rimonim for juice because they had so many rimonim. But that was not normal behavior. But since it's one individual, we're not going to extrapolate from that individual and say, well, if everybody owns Rimonim, they're going to squeeze it. One person can never be Koveya. Large cities can be Koveya if, in other places, were they in the same circumstances, they would act in a similar manner. Then we will say that that is Koveya and that has impact. Over here, B'nai Hutzal carry on their head. Everybody else could carry on their head, then they don't. So since they don't, we say b'tela datan. That's not the normal way to carry, and it's not considered to be determinant in establishing carrying on the head as being something normal. Right, next Mishnah. Hamit kavein lo tzilifanav, ovo lo l'acharav. Someone who intended to carry out with the object in front of them, and it moved to behind them, patur. Le'acharav, if he carried out behind him, ubalo l'fanav, and it came in front of him, chayav. In that case, he is chayav. Be'emet amru. They say, truthfully they said, and the Gemara will say that Be'emet means Halacha is Cain. Ha'isha cholgeret b'sinar. A woman who's wearing, the modern day word Hebrew is an apron. Over here, Rashi describes it as being some sort of knickers or leggings, something that they wore. Cain michnasayim k'tanim v'cholgeret otod litzniut. She wore it litzniut. So those items were around her waist, but it rotated. It was not stationary around her waist. Ben milafanar ben achareh chayevet. Whether it's in front of her or behind her, it's chayev, she can't ra'ui liyot chuzer. The natural way of this apron or knickers, whatever they are, was to move or to twist around her waist. It didn't stay stationary. It wasn't always in the same place, but moved around. Because of that, if it moves to the front or the back, that's an expectation that is normal. That's something that will happen. So it's true about those that are the messengers of the king. So Rashi says, when they give over to the Ratzim, to the messengers, they are chayav, even if their machshava was not kayem. Why was their machshava not kayem? So Rashi brings from his Rebbeim something that he says, v'libi megamgem. Keeps using this throughout this sugya, but he says, I have a very grave difficulty with this, that there were many messengers, and the king said, give it to so-and-so, the messenger. And instead, they gave it to someone else. And someone else took it. The other messenger took it. So even though his machshava wasn't carried out, because the messenger that he intended wasn't the one they chose, nevertheless, it's considered to be carrying, because that happens. Sometimes when the messengers aren't available, they give it to someone else. But that doesn't sound like what the Mishnah is speaking about. And the more likely scenario was that the messengers, akin to the messengers today on the bikes, that have like a tube or a strap around their shoulder when they carry things, or whether they have a bag, and it moves. It moves around. It moves the back to the front. It swings around their arm, around their shoulder. It moves around. And because of that, it's similar to what we're talking about with regards to the woman. The woman who wears this apron of sorts that moves around her waist, so do these messengers when they're carrying the things. They're not so careful about whether it's in front or back of them, but because it's strapped around them and it moves when they are running. So now Gemara says, Maishna lefanav uvolo lacharav. What's the difference between if it's in front of him and then it moved to the back that patur? Why? Because what he intended to do was not carried out. He intended to carry it in front of him, instead he carried it out and it was behind him. So the acharav uvolo lefanav, if he's carrying something that's behind him and then it moved to in front of him, Nami, Aloli David Machshavato, over there also. He intended for it to be behind him, instead it came up in front of him. So if that's the case, he should be putur in that case as well. Amar Rabbi Lazar, Tavra, Mishishanazu, Lo Shanazu. Rabbi Lazar's solution to the problem is say that there are two authors to the Mishnah, and each author of the Mishnah would believe that their position is correct in both cases. That means the one who says putur over here would say putur whether it moved from the front to the back, or the back to the front. And the one who says chayav would say chayav both from moving from the front to the back and the back to the front. That's Rabbi Lazar's solution. Amarava, my kushya. Rabbi says, why can't you reconcile these two cases? Dilma, lefanav, uvalo lacharav, hainu taimed the patur. I'll explain to you why your patur, when it was in front of you, it moved to behind you. Dinitkavin lishmira meula. He intended to carry it in front of him where he had visibility on the object and to watch. He was able to hold on to it carefully. Va'alta miyado, in the end, shmira pchuta. He ended up with a lesser shmira because it was behind him. Difference between carrying something in your front pocket and your back pocket. So he intended to be in his front pocket. Instead, it ended up in its back pocket. So the shmirah was degraded by it moving to the back. If that's the case, his machshava wasn't carried out. On the other hand, if he intended for it to be in his back, and it came in front of him, why is he? He had intended for a lesser shmirah. Instead, he ended up with a better shmirah. It's the equivalent of moving from your back pocket to your front pocket. It's better off being in the front pocket than it is in the back pocket. So because of that, you are chayav, because you ended up with a better situation than you intended. So then what's the problem with the Mishnah? Problem with the Mishnah is diyuka de matnitan. The diuk that you would make out of the Mishnah is a kasho, is a problem. Why? Because amit kaven lo tzi lefanav ovalo lacharav. Our Mishnah says if you intended to carry it out in front of you, in your front, and it moved to your back, patur. Ha, from that you can infer, lacharav uvalo lacharav, if you intended to carry it behind him. And that's what happened, chayav, because nothing changed. It was that it was his intent originally, and he carried it out with his intent. That would be from the ratio of the Mishnah. But in the Seifa, in a Seifa, l'achrav u'balo l'fanav, if it was behind him and it moved forward, huv de chayav, then he's chayav because he upgraded the shmirah. Hal achrav, what you'd be mitayek or infer from that is, if he intended for behind him, u'balo achrav, and it was behind him, patur, that it would remain patur. So the problem is the inference from the two pieces of the Mishnah end up with opposite results. One says that if you intended to carry behind you, and you did carry behind you, you are chayav. And the other one says, patur. On that we say, Amar Rabbi Lazar, Tavra, Misha Shanazu, Lo Shanazu. That answer that there are two authors to the Mishnah is because of this inference that derives from the Mishnah. Amar Ravashi, my kushya. Why does that have to be a problem? Dilma Lo Mibayi Kamar. The Mishnah is saying, you don't need to tell me this, not only this, but this, which is, Lo Mibayi Lacharav, Uvalo Lacharav, You don't have to tell me in a case where he intended for it to be behind him. And it did turn out to be behind him, Dimi Chayev. There is Chayav for sure, Dit Avid Machshvato, because his intent was carried out. Ella afilu l'acharav uvalo l'fanav. Even if it started out behind him, and it moved to in front of him, there, it's Trichole. We need you to tell us that that is Chayav. The Mishnah said it's obvious that if you intended it for me in his back pocket or behind him, and that's where it ended up, that he's Chayav, because everything he intended came true. So why should there be any reason not to make him Chayav? But what would you think in a case where he intended to have it behind him and it moves in front of him? There, we would need you to tell me this. I would think since his intent was not carried out and you need Melechet Machshevet on Shabbat, there he won't be Chayav. Kamash Malan, that's what it teaches us. That which we saw from Ravo before, and it's Gavin the Shmir Pchuta V'alt B'yado Shmir Me'ula, that's an upgrade in Shmirah to Chayav. So that's what the Mishnah is teaching you. That even if your intent is not carried out, but it ends up better than you intended, over there you're still Chayav. Because when you intend for something, you intend that to be the minimum standard. You don't mean that to be the maximum standard. And therefore, if that was your minimum standard, and that's what you carried out, yes, you're Chayav. If that's your minimum standard, then you upgraded and you got a better standard than that. You ended up in front of you, certainly there you're going to be Chayav. Ulacharav, ulacharav. Gemara says, maybe the case of acharav, ulacharav, tanahi, is really a machloket tanaim. If you intended to carry it behind you, and that's what happened, that is a machloket tanaim. Titania. Have a bright. Hamutzi ma'ot bepundato. Someone who takes out money in his belt, the money belt, pi alamalo. And the pouch or the belt is facing upward, meaning the opening is upward. Chayav. Everybody agrees there you're chayav, because that's a normal way to carry items. Pi alamato. On the other hand, if its mouth or its opening is facing down, Rabbi Yehuda mechayev, v'chachamim putrim. Rabbi Yehuda says you're chayav, v'chachamim say you're putur. Amalayan Rabbi Yehuda, iatem modim, don't you agree with me, bilacharav, v'vol acharav shu chayav, that if he carried it out when it was behind him, intended it for me behind him, that he is chayav. So over there you see, even though that's not the best way to carry it, it's not the highest standard of Shmirah that you could do. Nevertheless, if that's the way he carries it out, it's considered to be carrying. So let's extrapolate to here and let's say the same thing. Most people, you're right, wouldn't put their money in the belt when its opening is facing down. But nevertheless, if he did do it that way, and that's his intent, he should be chayav for carrying out his intent. So Amrulo and Dei Chachamim respond to Rabbi Yehuda and say, V'yata modeh, don't you agree, kalacha yado viraglo, he does it in an unusual way, on his hand or on his foot, shu patur, that he's patur, because that's kalacha yado, that's not the normal way of carrying. So too, if the money belt is turned upside down, that's not a normal way of carrying, therefore you should be patur. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda, ani amarti davar achad, vein amru davar achad, I brought a proof to my position, and they brought a proof to their position. Ani lo matzati tshuva l'dvarem, I don't have a way to undermine their proof. And they didn't find a way to upend or undermine my proof. And therefore, we're stuck. Our machloket remains. By the fact that Rabbi Yehuda presents his case to the Chachamim, iatem modim, don't you agree with me? Well, if he says, don't you agree with me, it means that they don't agree with him. And what is that? That the Rabbanan say you are patur. My says, the way you're reading that braita, the kamilei, and when they say to him, Iata modem, that don't you agree, Rabbi Yehuda? Michlal de Michayev, Rabbi Yehuda? Does that mean Rabbi Yehuda is really Michayev? V'atanyo, don't we have a braita that says, Achaya dobraglo, divrei akol patur? Everybody agrees, when you carry it on an unusual manner, on the back of your hand, or if you carry it on your foot, that everybody agrees that's patur, because that's considered to be an unusual manner to carry. And even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that way. So the way you're trying to read the braita does not read properly, because it would imply from the braita that Rabbi Yehuda thinks you're chayav in that case. And that's just not true. Ella, what you must conclude is, l'acharav, uvalo l'acharav, divrei akol chayav. Everybody agrees if he intended to carry it behind him, or in his back pocket, and that's what happened, he is chayav. L'chaya dover aglo, divrei akol patur. Everybody agrees if you carry it on the back of his hand, if he carries it on his foot, that everybody agrees that's patur, because that's an unusual way to carry items. Kiplige, where's their argument? Bepundato pi alamato. When you have the money belt with its opening facing downward. Mar medamele l'acharav uvalo acharav. Rabbi Yehuda compares that to the case of where he intended to carry it behind him, and that's what turned out. You're right, it's not the best way to carry it. It's not the best shmirah for the object, but nevertheless, if that's what he wants, then it works. So over here, by the pundato, that's not the normal way to weigh the belt. But nevertheless, if he wore the belt with its mouth facing down, maybe it's sealed up, maybe it has a zipper on it, but it could open. Nevertheless, if he intended to do that, that's good enough to make him chayav, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Umar midami leil achal yadov raglon, the chachamim say, no, that is so unusual, that is so backwards a way to carry your money, that that's equivalent to carrying on the back of your hand or on your foot. It's considered to be unusual, and you would be patur in that case. So the conclusion of the Gemara is that if someone intends to carry acharav behind him, and that's what turns out to happen, he puts in his back pocket and that's the way he carries it out, then he is chayav. Everybody agrees to that. The difference between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is talking about the money belt that is facing downward, its mouth facing downward. Rabbi Yehuda says that's similar to wearing something on your back or in your back pocket. Chachamim say no, that's similar to carrying in an unusual manner. That's why they come up with their difference in opinion. But the Braita before, where Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim were bringing proofs to their positions, that was not indicating that the Chachamim disagreed with Rabbi Yehuda in that case. And it doesn't mean Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with the Chachamim in the proofs that they brought. They agree in the proofs that they brought. But the question is, which proof is the right one to equate to the money belt? Okay, now the Gemara continues. It says, Be'emet Amru, that truthfully, that's what they said. Tana, kol emet, halacha hi. Anytime you see in the Mishnah the word emet, the halacha is that way. It's coming to establish the halacha and to say, this is the definitive halacha. Gemara in other places will say, when the Mishnah says that the halacha is this way, we're not governed by it, what the Mishnah says in terms of halacha, because the Gemara is who paskins halacha. You don't paskin halacha from a Mishnah. But over here, the Gemara says, emet means that the halacha is this way. Rabbi Yehuda Meir, af mekablei pitkin. So too are those messengers that take the messages. Tana, shekein lav derei machut osim kein. Because the scribes of the king do this. Now, what does that mean that the scribes of the king do this? So you have a number of interpretations. The Aruch, for instance, says, Perish Lavlar, what a Lavlar is Sofrei, HaMelech is Sofrei Machut, the scribes of the king. Mechogrim Sinar, they wear aprons, they wear things. I mean, the scribes in their day worked with ink that got all over the place and messy. So just like the women, they wore some sort of apron around them, so whether it's around their lap or around their waist, to protect themselves from the ink. So Betolim Pitkin Bimotehem, and after they write things or blank notes, they put into their loins, they put over there. Pamim Shibayim Lifnim, Pamim Shibayim Lachor. Sometimes the apron or the items are in the front, sometimes they're in the back. So based on that, what the Aruch is saying is that it's the equivalent of what the Isha does. Now, from the Aruch, it sounds like that is the definition of the Mekablei Pitkin in our Mishnah. The Mekablei Pitkin in our Mishnah are the Sofrei HaMelech that carry the messages. That's one. Rashi says, Shekein Lavlerei Machuto Simkein, B'da'ato L'masran L'zeh, V'imotzeh, V'davar HaMelech Nachutz, U'matzah Acher Mosro Lo. That sometimes they're looking for this person, they can't find him, so they give it to someone else. Rashi continues with the explanation that he had from his Rebbeim, that here the difference or the problem is not that the apron or something on them changes, it's the individual themselves. He thought he was going to get this scribe, or he thought he was going to get this messenger. Turns out he's not available, and they get someone else. So even though his intent, or the king's intent, was for this individual, when he's not around, they found someone else that's still carrying out the orders of the king, and it's considered to be carrying, or whatever they're doing wrong here, is considered to be a carrying out of the machshava. That's the way Rashi learns it, continuing the theme that is Rebbeim set. Tosavot over here says something which makes a lot of sense, which is that the Gemara over here is not defining what Mekablei Pitkin are. The Mishnah has a case of Mekablei Pitkin. The Mishnah mentions over here is a case similar by Pitkin that is similar to the way that an Isha wears her apron. And that's why the Gemara brought it over here. Mefarish Rabbeinu Shmuel. Sheesh Adam Umuneh LaMelech. There's a person who's appointed by the king, Shenosei Pitkin Shalmelech, that carries around the messages of the king, Leida, Minyan Gibrotav, V'chayalav, to know how many people are in his army, Obeit HaTzvotav, what's in the treasury, Nosim Otan B'Kiseim, they put in their pockets, that's Luim B'Ezoreim, they're around their waist, V'Otan Kisin Chozrim Pamim Lefneim Opeim Lachreim, and those belts or those pecs move around their body. V'Avei Mamash Dumya D'Sinar, very similar to the woman's Sinar, Shu Chozer. The Tanakam Rabbi Yehuda lo chashiv lechozer. The Tanakam Rabbi Yehuda doesn't consider that to move around. V'had the mighty Gemara Tana shekein laverei amalchut osim kein klomar shechozer debeinyan zeh mayri reisha. Because they're trying to equate it or bring you a case that's similar to what was in the reisha. So it's not clear whether they're really defining what the mekablei pitkin are. Could be that that's what the definition of mekablei pitkin is. But I think the easy way to read it is that the Gemara is giving you another example that's in the similar vein as to that which is with the woman. the woman Sinar, what's similar with regards to someone who works with Bitgin, that's the Lavrei Machut. These individuals, the scribes of the king, they track, they're really like the historians of the king, they keep track of all of his numbers, all of his things that are going on. The accountants, I don't know exactly what you want to call them, but they carry around this Bitgin. But they do it in a way that is similar to the woman's Sinar. And that is why the Gemara is saying that this Tana we added in, this item, Shein Lavrei Machut Simkin, that they do it in a similar manner. Okay, Mishnah, Amutzi Kikar, the Rishut Rabim. Someone who carries out a loaf of bread into the Rishut Rabim, Chayav. Utzi Ushnayim Turim. If two people carry out that loaf of bread, they are Patur. Lo Yachol Echad Utzio. If one of them alone couldn't have carried out the bread, it's one of your foot-long submarines, or one of these very long pieces of bread, French bread that extends over a large area, you need two people to carry out the French bread. So then, Hotzio Shnaim, two people take it out, Chayavim, because they couldn't have done it alone. Rabbi Shimon, Poter, Rabbi Shimon says you're still Poter, what we are now bumping into or entering into the world is what we call Shnaim Shasu. Two people will accomplish something. When two people do something, over here we're going to see in a second, it depends, could they have done it alone? Or are they required to do that? And that's going to end up having a differing outcome in halacha. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Amri lo Amar Baiv. Amri lo Matnita. Some say we have it in a Braita. Tana. Zeyachol v'zeyachol. If they both individually could have done the malacha without each other. Rabbi Meir Mechayev. Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon Potrim. If they individually could have done the malacha and then they do it together. Rabbi Meir says you're chayav. Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon say you're patur. Zeino Yachol v'Zeino Yachol. This one couldn't do it alone, and this one couldn't do it alone. Then, Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Meir Michayevim, Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Meir Michayev, Rabbi Shimon is Poter. Ze Yachol v'Zeino Yachol. This one could do it, and this one could not do it alone. Dibri Yachol Chayav. Everybody agrees you're Chayav. Which one is Chayav over here is not clear, whether it's the Yachol or Eino Yachol. The Gemara will discuss that later. Now, as far as the Braita is concerned, it's clear who the author of our Mishnah is. The author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. Because in the Braita, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is that if they are both capable of doing it, and they do it together, they are patur, like our Mishnah. And in our Mishnah it says, if they both cannot do it alone, and they do it together, they're chayav, like the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. And we see that our Mishnah says, Rabbi Shimon Poter, like the Shitato in the Braita, that Rabbi Shimon's Poter in all of these cases. So Rabbi Meir is Michayev in all the cases. Rabbi Shimon is Poter in all the cases, and yet Rabbi Yehuda is the Shita Beinayim. It's the in-between Shita who says that if they are both capable of doing it, they are Patur. If they're both incapable of doing it, they are Chayav, and he therefore is the Tanakama, the author of our Mishnah. Tanya Ami Achiva Breita that supports this. Amotzi Kikar L'Shut Rabim. Someone takes out a loaf of bread L'Shut Rabim. Chayav. Hotzio Shnaim. Two people take it out. Rabbi Meir Michayev. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Im lo yachol echad otzio v'otzio shnayim, if one of them couldn't take it out, and they both took it out, chayavim. V'im lav, if they both could have taken it out individually, and they take it out together, piturim. Rabbi Shimon Poter, and Rabbi Shimon is Poter in all of the cases. Nahani mile. Where do we know this from? That shnayim shiatsua, the two people that joined together to do a single malacha that they could have done individually, that they are piturim. It comes from the pasuk by the Korban HaChatat, the Tan Rabbanan, basota, when you do the sin, when you violate the sin. How said kula, velo said miktsata. Someone who does all of the melacha, but not a portion of the melacha. You're only held culpable when you're asota, when you've done everything that there is to do. If someone else is doing part of what there is to do, then you are not chayav. Ketzad. Shnaim shayuokzim bimalgez. Two people are holding a malgez. Look in the Mishorah, Tashas over here, he says that's perish mazleg. It's a swapping of the letters to mean a fork. Rashi describes it as a pitchfork. So it's a pitchfork, velogzim, to sweep up the corn, to flip over the shibalim of the corn. So two people are grabbing this pitchfork to do the work. Bikarkar, vishovtim. Two people grab the shuttle, vishovtim, and they use that to press down the loom, to press down that which has already been stitched. Bikulmos, two people hold on to a quill, vikotvim, and they write. Bikane, two people hold on to a cane or a staff, veotziol, vishutarabim, and take it out of vishutarabim. Yochoye chayavim, you would think they'd be chayavim. Talmud Omer, ba'asuta. When you do it, all of it. Hased kula, below it say miktsata. In each of these cases, the two people are contributing a portion of the malacha to be done. No individual is doing the malacha themselves, and therefore they will not be culpable, they will not be chayav achatat. On the other hand, bigul shel dvela. I'm talking about a circle of pressed figs. Veotziol rishut rabim. Bikora, you're talking about a beam. Veotziol rishut rabim, and they took it out into the public domain. Veodomer, im lo yochal echad otziol, if it was so big, the pressed figs were so big or heavy, or the board was so big or heavy, that individually they couldn't carry it out. Yotziu shnayim, and then they carried out together. Chayavim, they are chayav. Vim lav turim. If not, they are patur. Rabbi Shimon Omer, even if each individual by themselves couldn't do it, turim, they still are patur. Because that's why it says basuta. Yachid shasa chayav. Shnayim sasua turim. So Rabbi Shimon's drush on the pasuk is slightly different. Before we said basuta means you have to do the entire malacha, not a portion of the malacha. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, that means you have to do the entirety of what you're capable of doing in order to be chayav. Your capability of what you can do is either in a case where you can do the whole malacha, you must do the whole malacha. In a case where you still need the other individual, you can only do half. If you did half, you did everything you could do. Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, Darshan's basuta means an individual must do it, not two individuals. And so therefore, Rabbi Shimon, it doesn't matter whether you could accomplish this alone or not. Even if you couldn't accomplish this alone, you're only chayav for malacha if an individual does it, not when two individuals do it. So that's the difference in terms of their drasha of the psukim. But the Gemara tomorrow, and we'll continue with this tomorrow, says, but my kamiflege. What exactly are they arguing about? What is the premise of their machloket? Okay, we'll stop over here.